All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. We're just a bunch of Kiss fans and we talk Kiss. So come along for the ride. You've got nothing to lose. Join the Kiss FAQ YouTube channel. Member perks include exclusive song story demo bites, songs of the moment with contextual introductions, document and merchandise dives, Kiss FAQ board topic reaction videos, early access to channel content, and hopefully lots more. Click the join button on the Kiss FAQ YouTube channel or follow this link. All right, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. I'm your host, Julian Gill. Thank you for taking time out of your morning or day to listen to the show. We do appreciate your support, and especially to those who are joining us live, Ronnie Parker, Austin Newland, Sylvie Roos, Surfer Fan, and anyone else who joins after I stop talking about all that. I want to thank everyone because we're just about to hit 1.6 million views. I know that's not a lot in the terms of YouTube world, but for us, I'm really happy, and I appreciate everyone who's contributed to those views. So thank you all very much. News this week, not going to talk about Gene, Eddie Trunk stuff. Let that percolate a little bit more until the next episode. Hopefully there'll be more news on that that the guys can dig into next weekend. Audio Odyssey chapter number one went live on Wednesday, I believe, for the masses. So just an introductory episode to what I'm doing. Just a big shout out to Three Sides for sharing that on their socials. Very much appreciated. You know, it's great when podcasts support one another, and that's very positive for the KISS community and very important. So thank you guys. Very much appreciated. Episode two comes out this week to the masses on Wednesday. Finished recording and editing episode three yesterday, and then I'll be taking a little break from the Elder investigation because I've got something else coming in the next couple of weeks, and here's just a little bit of a teaser from it. Welcome to Kiss FAQ's song story series. Though to be fair, this episode should be called A Songless Story. In this special episode, we'll focus on KISS Coming Alive, the period leading to the release of their seminal Alive album in 1975. Many of these notable moments in history celebrate their 50th anniversaries in 2025. So that's coming in a couple of weeks because obviously May the 16th is when everything kicks off in terms of celebrating KISS Alive, the next major celebration. You know, that's kind of coming. We've got Unmasked, you know, 45, which we'll do a refocused episode on. But that is ready to go. It follows up Beacon at Midnight, and I hope you'll enjoy that as much as many people seem to enjoyed the first one. And thank you, everyone who did check that out. Daniel, you've got some news as well, don't you?
Yeah, I'd just like to mention that if you can't get enough of KISS and KISS podcasts, in 2 hours, there will start another podcast episode on the Let Know podcast where we watch Animal Eyes Live Uncensored from start to finish. And we're commenting on what's happening. So it's KISS night for me today. I have two podcasts in a row. Man, am I lucky. And the other news, this is kind of breaking news because I don't think that this is out there. You recall this magazine I've shown you a few times? Destroyer magazine, the Swedish magazine, the longest running fanzine ever in KISS world. And I'm wearing blue and yellow like the Swedish flag because this is now going to be written in another language from the next issue. It will be completely in English.
Ooh.
So this is for all fans out there. If you like to get a hold of this, get in contact with Swedish KISS Army and check it out. I'm just going to show you briefly how it looks. First of all, it's very glossy, you know. All the pages are glossy. There's always a cool poster in the middle of it. Lots and lots of stuff. It's over 50 pages long, each issue. I think you get like 3-4 issues every year. It's very, very cheap. Not a whole lot of dollars. Not in in Kiss world, it's extremely cheap. So it's well worth your money.
Yeah.
And great photos, great layout done by the great Marco of the Let Me Know podcast. So he's involved in this. And in this one, there are especially good articles. Let's see who has written. Daniel. Okay. So there are some great articles in this one.
That?
Yours truly. So that's breaking news here on the Kiss FAQ podcast. The next Kiss Destroyer magazine will be completely in English. So,
yay.
That's cool.
No, that is, we've been asking for it. So, you know, thank you very much, Kiss Destroyer fanzine, because I'll be a subscriber as soon as someone posts the link of where I can subscribe for the US. And no doubt,
give us the link
to figure out. Yep, September or October 2025, next issue. Daniel, get those links posted in the chat to where the Let Me Know podcast is going to be. I take it that one's going to be in Swedish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, get that posted. Get the links to the Destroyer fanzine posted as well so that people will know where they're able to go and subscribe to that when the time comes. But that is fantastic news. Mm-hmm. You know, what I've seen of the magazine and have translated for my own edification is very high quality. We're talking about real fans, a broad range of fan interests as well. The quality speaks for itself.
And hopefully it will attract new writers from other countries. Maybe a few. They already have presented a lot of articles from Americans, for example. So hopefully more people will feel inclined to write something about what happened in their country. And it can be the Kiss fanzine of the world instead of Sweden.
Yeah.
No, we need one. We need one to rule them all. One ring. All right. So today's topic is all about Ken. And during the 1980s, this guy up here, that guy right there, that lunatic, he went to a heck of a lot of concerts in the 1980s. And that's just a spreadsheet of them. We're going to be talking about all of Ken's 1980 kisses, going through the concerts for his memories. We're going to be pinging him with our questions about what he remembers from those shows specifically. He's talked about the three Creatures of the Night ones, but we want to do it officially, all in one episode, to have those kisses combined with everything else. But Ken, you know, going back to the very first show of the 1980s that you saw, you know, what are the highlights for you in that decade of the best shows from any band, not only Kiss, that you saw during the 1980s?
Well, the first one I would say is the very first one. You can't see it, but it's because it's right above the Rush one. And I guess Rush would be a highlight for me, too. But right above that was New Year's Eve show, actually, with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Which had, you know, Eddie Money and Chuck Berry opening too. That was a big one for me. That was a big deal. Seeing Rush, I was a very big Rush fan at that time, probably more then than now, but yeah, I still am a Rush fan, of course. But that was a big deal then. Some other ones, Blackfoot, down a little bit. Yeah, Blackfoot with Def Leppard opening. And I went there for Blackfoot, really. Though I did know Def Leppard because I had bought the High and Dry album. And so that was a heck of a concert there in Oakland. Some other ones were the big ones, like there's a Day on the Greens that they had at the Oakland Stadium. Foreigner in 82 was the headliner. But you had Loverboy, the Scorpions, and Iron Maiden as the openers on over there on the right-hand column there. So that was big. Van Halen was always a big deal. You know, I was a Billy Joel fan. I saw him a couple times too. Of course, you know, we'll get the Kiss, but some other ones. Let's see here. I had I was a big Shooting Star fan, and I actually went to Great America, which is a theme, you know, I don't know what to call it, Six Flags now? I don't know what they call it. But I was a big fan of Shooting Star. And so I really enjoyed that one. I at least got to see them one time. Some other ones, Dio was another one I saw just once, and with YNT opening, that was also a New Year's Eve show, at the Cow Palace. Most of these are most of them are at the Cow Palace. Van Halen again. Another one with Crocus, and I don't know if I went for Wasp on that show, because I saw Crocus was the headliner and you had Wasp and Helix. I think I went because of Wasp, even though Crocus was pretty darn good band too. So that was a big deal for me. There's a lot. There's just a lot, what I do. Van Halen a few times that in the 80s. Aerosmith was a big one towards the bottom when 1988 with Guns N' Roses opening for Aerosmith. That was a great show because we had the
your album. Ticket stubs for both those shows are in the volume 2 of the Aerosmith I did as well. So what was from this whole list of concerts, what was the best one from your recollection, and what was the worst show?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me,
or the most disappointing,
including Kiss.
From that list.
For me, the first Creatures of the Night would probably be my best, most exciting concert that I went to during that time. I guess there's the other one too, because there's the other Day on the Green with the Scorpions down in, it was 85, I think it is, where Scorpions headlined and you had Rat, YNT, Metallica,
Rising Force,
yeah, with Yngwie Malmsteen,
and
Victory. So that was a hell of a concert. Because I was just getting into Metallica at that time. I think that was around Ride the Lightning.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite Metallica album, actually. So that was good. I love Scorpions. I mean, I really, really love the Scorpions. So that was a big one. One of the worst, I want to say it wasn't a bad show, but what was a bummer is like John Fogerty. I love John Fogerty. I love Creedence. But back then, John Fogerty, he did not play any Creedence songs. He only played because of his thing with Zance or whatever. He only played Centerfield and the next album. What was the next album? But he played all those songs and a few other songs. He would not play Creedence at that time, which now he does all the time. He plays all the classic songs, but at that time, that was, for me, a bummer. So,
All right. So you'd seen Kiss in 79 for their the Cow Palace show on the Dynasty Tour. So it was a long wait between shows for you. When we go back to the Creatures of the Night Tour kicking off, what's your recollection of finding out about the tour? And also finding out about a slight issue with the guitarist situation within the group.
Yeah, well, there was the album came out, and which was, of course, we know it's great and everything. But then later in that, probably the same year, I knew they were going on tour. They probably put the tickets on sale. I don't know what was date on that thing, but they went on tour. And I didn't know anything really about it until there were some grumblings in an early January Kerrang where it says, the guitar doesn't sound like Ace in this kind of stuff, right? And Ace was had a car accident and all this stuff, but they didn't mention anything about any other guitar. Paul Stanley said in an interview that it's a mysterious person that's playing some of the guitar and that kind of stuff. Well, right?
That's one way of describing it, Brian.
Yeah. But it's in there. It's in that current. It's like a January issue of Kerrang of 83. And then this one, yeah, this article came out in this, the month that I first saw Kiss in March. This was in the Kerrang of March of 83. They mention here about, oh, this guy's filling in, kind of, you know, this Vinnie Vincent guy, for Ace, because Ace is, you know, still recovering from whatever and doing other stuff. So it wasn't a definite, you know, member, or he wasn't considered that, at least as part of that little article and so on. So that was kind of like, oh. So when we were going to go to the concert, I didn't know who, you know, what guitarist was going to be there. Because I didn't know, oh, was Ace going to be back by the time or not?
Yeah.
So, all right, Mark, and Daniel, don't forget to jump in with questions. Otherwise, I'm just going to steamroller the show as I usually
steamroll.
Yeah, I have one question. What was your initial reaction to Vinnie Vincent on stage, and how did you think it was too different from Ace, or did you like it? Was it like a new blood in the band, or what was the feeling?
Yeah, it was. You know, you kind of. What's funny is he's a new member. So what you do is you kind of focus on them a bit. So I was focusing on it and focusing on some of the solos and things like that. And he obviously was very talented, you know, guitar player. And some of the guitar solos he did actually stick pretty well to the original, certain ones, like in Firehouse. He does a damn good job on Firehouse, at least at that time. We've heard some of the early shows where he's all over the place with a lot of things. But this is now the end of the tour, right? The last number five dates or so of the tour. And he was actually doing, you know, pretty good. But then there are some other ones like, whoa, that doesn't sound anything like that. Like the, you know, a certain solo here or there, but yeah. For the most part, he did pretty good. I focused on him. I said, yes, obviously the guy can really play, and he was a presence out there. He was a presence.
I got a question. I'm curious about one thing. I mean, there was much said about the opener, of course, Motley Crue, a few times. Not only in the things that was provided in these fine pieces that Julian provided for us, but in other things I remember reading, where they're saying that Motley Crue was definitely the better band of the night. I'm just curious about your opinion of that. What did you think of Motley Crue when you first saw them live? I know you're going to say that they're not better because you're a very Kiss-devoted man, so you're never going to, of course, say that.
I thought they were great. They're a great new band. They were kind of, you know, a new kind of shot in the arm excitement in the heavy metal world. So I had bought that out, their first album, mm-hmm. by chance at a Rasputin record store.
Nice.
Out here. And Julian's probably heard of that, I'm sure. You know, I saw the cover and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Looks like it's got to be heavy stuff or whatever. So I bought that first, and it was on their own label, Leather Records, It was on Elektra. I still have it. I thought, and then when I played that album, I thought it was great. And then when I saw they were opening for Kiss, I was like, whoa, this is going to be good. This, you know, this is a good album, too. So, they were good. They had a theatrical kind of show, too. They had movements, like on their first song, they do the, you know, like this thing, back and forth, which is cool. I thought, oh. You know, they're kind of like a, you know, you can see they were heavily influenced by Kiss.
I mean, did Nicky do the burning boots?
Yeah, did they set Mick on? They used to spray lighter fluid on Mick and light him up.
Yeah, they light his boots on fire.
Yeah, nice. Okay,
I remember that. I don't know if he did it on all three shows that I saw, but I know I saw it at least one, and I thought, well, wow, it's kind of crazy.
Kiss taking Motley out was, you know, it's like the next generation of Kiss in a way. Mm-hmm. Just like Aerosmith later took Guns out, it was like them taking their kids out on the road with them. It was like never an easy day.
But it's interesting when I see these kind of comparisons, like when Aerosmith did that, Kiss did this. But I always feel like sometimes like it almost seems like they kind of make it sound like a negative thing sometimes, because they always make it sound like, well, Guns were far superior to Aerosmith and Motley Crue was much more livelier than Kiss. It almost seems like it's like the intention is good, but sometimes it almost backfires, it seems. Sometimes
they weren't more lively than Kiss, because Kiss was like on a mission on this album to try to I think gain the fans back. They came out with such an aggression. It was a big difference from the Dynasty tour that I saw prior.
Yeah. I just meant in general, right?
Another quick question. When you read the reviews from California, they're mostly negative, but they do think that Kiss still brings a cool show. They mentioned that there are bombs going on. If you compare the Creatures concert with the other Kiss concerts you've been to, in the 70s and early to mid and late 80s, where would you rank it as if you just go for effects and stage show?
In the 80s or only?
Yeah, maybe you can also include the Dynasty tour.
He means this show in comparison to the other ones you saw around that time, right?
Yeah, so from 79 to 88, where would you rank the Creatures show when it comes to effects and, you know, the stage show?
Entertainment value.
Yeah.
Entertainment value? I would say the Creatures show, just because of the whole effect of the stage. I mean, Dynasty was a cool thing. They had a lot of stuff going on there, and it was all flashy and stuff and colorful and whatnot. But this one was, Creatures was more, up my...
Menacing.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, though, Asylum was a pretty good one too, especially with the larger lights and coloring and everything all that stuff. But it's got to be Creatures.
I was just gonna say that one of the big things with both Kiss and Aerosmith in the mid 1980s was they acknowledged, bands like Guns, and other acts being inspired by them. And one of their big selling lines when they went back out on the road was, we're going to show the kids how it's really done. Both of them, that was a big selling point during the Back in the Saddle tour for Aerosmith. Let's wrap up the Motley Crue side of things, because obviously they're going to open all three of these shows. What was your favorite Motley song? Because they had already started performing stuff from Shout at the Devil in late 82. So they had a lot of the catalog was already there. But what did
I say? Piece of Your Action, I think.
You said Piece of Your Action. So let's play a little bit of Piece of the Action from Motley in 1983. What I like about this the most is Vince is still singing. Enough of that. That's way too much high end. Ken, last word on Motley Crue from that.
It was good. I was lucky to see them. Those shows were the only time I saw them until Kiss, they opened for Kiss, just recently, or 10 years ago, or whatever it was, about 10 years ago. Yeah. So that was. They were great. I thoroughly enjoyed them at that time, so it was cool. I just got a quick thing. well, you know, when you go to that concert, Kiss concert, the first thing you do, you go to the merch stand and you get like this.
Very concert?
That's from the concert. Yeah, nope. I bought that at the concert. I bought this hat.
This is the 10th anniversary hat. Nice. It's very actually incredible. Still survived.
Mint condition.
No, it's not mint. It's
it looks like that anyway.
And then the other. Let's see. What's the other thing I have? Oh, from the San Francisco show, I have the.
Oh, guitar pick.
This is Gene Simmons' pick.
Oh, nice.
From the the Cal Palace show, San Francisco. And then the other thing you do, you get, of course, at every Kiss show.
Program, yes.
That looks in great shape as well.
That's been pretty good shape. It's survived, so it's, you know.
I mean, Daniel, you gotta believe he would not pick up a Paul Stanley pick when he knows there's a Gene one.
No, right? No. He probably gave away the Paul Stanley.
Throw it back to Paul.
Yeah. It's
Kevin. Threw it back on stage.
Right. I would keep it.
We've got a shit ton of multimedia today. Ken, what was your pick for your favorite song from Irvine Meadows, the first show that you saw?
Creatures of the Night, because came out with such a, you know,
opening track.
Just let's go to the bootlegs and relive that moment. Here we go. Creatures of the Night from Irvine Meadows.
You wanted the best, and you got the best. The hottest band in the world.
You know, some of these bootlegs can be a little bit of a rough listen, but I'm so grateful that we have them so that we can go back to the moment. Just to explain, when we get to Ken's other two shows from this tour, we're not going to be playing the recordings from Universal City or San Francisco because they're basically donkey vomit. So we'll just play his favorite songs from the Irvine, which is the best of the three. These are not off the soundboards, and there's no point playing those either because... you know, they were well rehearsed by this time, and Vinny was fully incorporated into the group. All right, moving on. Universal City, your second show, a couple of days later, same lineup again. Motley Crue opening. What do you recall of that? Two shows in a row. That must have been fun.
Yeah, it was 2 days in a row. I was deaf by the by the third day, but that was an indoor, where the first one was outdoor, so the indoor was probably louder or harder on my ears, I want to say, because it was just enclosed, and it's, you know, it's not a huge place, but it's a Universal amphitheater, that was a great. We knew what to expect kind of on that one. We weren't as close, you know. The first one we were pretty much right up front with Irvine. The second one we were further back, but towards the end of the show, Paul says, you know, come on down, and everyone rushes down there. And I think it's at that show where he says something about, you know, people are getting crushed at the front, you know, and I was one of the people getting crushed. And he says, oh, you know, you don't want to be, you know, take it easy. You don't want to be today's whatever to be tomorrow's baloney or something like that. He says that line. Anyway, which is funny. It's on the actual tape. But yeah, that was, I mean, it's the same thing. It was great. And the indoor was maybe it was a little bit cooler with it being indoor, because I think I like Kiss indoor versus outdoor.
Yeah, so they were still getting major press. I mean, this review is from Variety, big trade magazine from back in the day. So tail end of the tour, Kiss isn't completely dead and buried at this time, even if Paul Stanley felt he could order pizza for the audience.
They say bad things about Kiss a lot of times in these articles, and then at the end, sometimes they say, "Oh, but you know, I enjoyed it." That guy.
Yeah, exactly.
After all the bad things they say, they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Then they admit that they remember that it was fun and all that, you know. So Kiss still delivered entertainment. All right, what was your favorite song from this show?
Was that Black Diamond? The one I said,
Black Diamond. Black Diamond. Here's some Black Diamond, and again, this is from Irvine, just so you can get a taste of the band in full force.
This song's called Girls. Girls. Out on the street for a living. Pictures of that we got. Got you in there.
All right, Black Diamond, Eric Carr.
Yep.
Full throated. You know, this is your first time hearing Eric Carr.
Yeah, that was the Earth to Focus, besides, Vinny being this new guitarist. But I mean, Eric Carr is really the new drummer. And I hadn't seen him live. That was the first time. And he was a monster on the drums. He was so energetic. And I think that's part of it. He gave Kiss that kick in the butt that, you know, made them energize the music even more than, you know, it used to be. So him and Vinny, these two new guys, kind of brought Gene and Paul back to life, I guess.
So
in general, people talk about Kiss being Peter, Ace, Paul, and Gene. How much did you miss Peter and Ace? Was there a difference there? Did you miss one more than the other?
maybe, you know, Ace, just because of his soloing and his aceisms and all that stuff, and, you know, able to play those solos, you know, that are, you know, melodic during the shows and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, at that time, I didn't miss him that much. I mean, it was a different time period. I missed him a little bit, but not so much. I think later on, as we went down the line, you missed it, and that's why we're, you know, Kiss
came back. I got something to ask. So when you were in the audience, I mean, obviously you could tell how the people were there and how they reacted and stuff like that. And you saw quite a few of these shows. So the set list obviously is, you know, heavier on the, you know, newer material, right? Which is expected, right? Mm-hmm. How did you react to the fact that there was very little makeup stuff, early makeup stuff in the set list? And what do you think the audience reaction was to that? Did you think they wanted more of the older stuff, or did you think they didn't care really?
I don't think they cared that much, because I think what you got at this point at the Creatures time, these people that were at the show, including myself, were the diehard fans. These were not casual fans by this point, because Kiss kind of, they
all died.
They were gone. They were out of the, you know, public eye. They thought they were, you know, history and dinosaurs already by that time.
Yeah.
It's like they were a fad. in the 70s. Now no one cares anymore. But no one cared except for the diehard fans that stayed on board like myself. And yeah. So I think they didn't care. I didn't care, you know. Sure, I'd like to hear this or that kind of song, but I liked hearing those brand new songs because I love that new album that just mm-hmm. come out.
And what about the crowd? I mean, the previous show was sold out, and this one is well over 7,000 people.
There's for the venue size, you know, because it's not an arena.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
No. But they all seemed full to me. I mean, yeah. I've said that before on other ones in the past years on the show. That
you weren't counting belts or empty seats. Were
wasn't
you?
It? But I looked back. I mean, I looked back and I saw, man, there's a lot of people here. Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem empty at all.
Yeah. So you didn't get the feeling that this tour is tanking at all?
Not from my perspective, but I wasn't thinking about, oh, they're playing
but
the smaller venue because they can't sell as much tickets and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but well over 7,000.
No, I never even felt that. I mean, thought about that at that time.
Yeah. I mean, but he was talking about that from the overall perspective. I mean, sure, the response that they did good, like, you know, maybe Detroit and stuff like that. But there's other areas where they had trouble, obviously, with the
events. Yeah. It's a very spotty tour, but no one would have had that data at the time. And
frankly, yeah, exactly.
No 15-year-old kid is going to give a shit. They're just going to a concert, living in the moment. There's no cell phones. They maybe have tried to sneak in a little 110 camera or something, but it's a whole different experience at that age. Mm-hmm. And that's what we lose track of. I mean, everyone, if you're wondering about what these images are that I'm using for the guide, these pages for 83, 84 are from the In Progress War Machine book. You know, and this final show in San Francisco, that's Ken's picture, photograph. So Ken's a concert.
Is that your picture of Gene?
Ken's photo. I actually took that with my camera.
What a shot.
It was a crappy camera, let me tell you.
Well, it turned out good, though.
Yeah, it's been AI'd. Come on, a little bit.
I think it was one of those Instamatic cameras. Yeah, I had a better camera, but that was a...
Come on, like, you've got a photo of Gene breathing fire for what is the very last time in the U.S. During the makeup era.
I caught it just at the right time. I had one chance to catch it.
Got one shot.
That's one of the best flames I've seen from an audience shot. Even it may not be perfect
timing.
The photo, people may be poo-pooing it, but I love the dynamics of that photo. Mm. That you can feel the heat.
Yeah, for sure.
At least I can. So what's your favorite song from the third and final of the Creature shows that you saw?
Firehouse. Because I always liked Firehouse, and I like the, you know, up speed or, you know, faster.
Up-tempo.
Hell yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, that's an appropriate pick considering that fantastic photo. Here's a bit of Firehouse from Irvine, but think of it as San Francisco. Probably was the same. That's Mark, you know, from the three that we've played, which was your favorite? And from the show that you listened to, did you have a favorite song I know these aren't audiophile, and I'm sorry for hurting your ears.
Some of them were a little rough, but a lot of these ones were actually pretty decent. I thought the first two shows were, you know, bearable and listenable. I liked Universal, that second show. I think that was my favorite of the three that I listened to. And of that show, I mentioned it in the chat there. I think that I was really impressed with I Still Love You. That was really well done. I thought he did a great job of that. And Paul, you know, he still had his voice in full form, and he was, you know, able to hit all these fantastic soaring notes, and it really turned out good. The only, you know, a little bit of a comment that I'll make, and this comes from the guitar player end of me, is I thought that he should have maybe rolled back the guitar a little bit more. It was a little too distorted, that tone, but still, that's just nitpicking, right? But it was very, very well done. I thought that was a really fantastic performance.
Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, I think the guitar playing is one of the focus points in this concert, or in these concerts from the Creature Store. And I listened to the Universal show from Los Angeles as well, and I was just blown away by some of Vinny's solos. You know, I always mention that to Colin, like the Love solo from Rio. But he shows his chops in quite a few songs on this. Of course, he nails Creatures of the Night and stuff like that. But I also enjoyed some of his interpretations of the older songs. I just wish they would have done one of my favorite songs from the first album. I would have loved to hear Vinny play that song. He never played Deuce. I think Deuce could have been really heavy on this tour. You know, opening up with Creatures of the Night and Deuce like they did in the latter years, you know, have Vinnie Vincent going crazy on that one. I think that could have been some insane stuff.
We just have to wait for the evidence to surface.
Okay.
Oh. Maybe Show one day.
Maybe one day. So I just enjoyed Vinnie's solos. And as Mark mentioned, at times he struggles with some, or if it was Kenny, he struggles with some of the older solos, but I still enjoy it just because of the variety, you know, the change, it feels fresh. You haven't heard too much from Vinny. I haven't heard too much more than the stuff that was in the box set. So I always enjoy some Vinny soloing.
Ken, you got to pick one of those three for your favorite, because right now I gave you the opportunity to basically have a three-way tie for your favorite. Now you got to pick one. Sorry, dude.
One of the features?
Yeah, which is your favorite?
Oh, Black Diamond. Black Diamond.
good, Ken.
All right, he did it. He was decisive.
He did it.
Yeah, no ties.
All right, moving on into 84. You get to see them a year later. They come to the Civic Auditorium. Oh, wait, no, we didn't sell enough tickets, so we got to move it to the Berkeley Community Theater, I think it was.
Right? Yeah.
Let me just move to the Berkeley. Yeah, it was the
Community Theater. Theater.
Yeah.
And, wow, they went from $72.99 at the Civic the previous year, and it fell all the way down to $3,500. And Bill Graham would still have canceled this because it was that bad. The mighty had fallen. And they've got two opening acts, Vandenberg and Riot. Ken, your memories from the Lick It Up tour?
Yeah, I was excited. You know, I thought, oh, we were going to go back to the, you know, Civic Auditorium in San Francisco, and then you get the notice or whatever. I don't know how I found it in the paper that it had been moved to the Berkeley Community Theater. I was like, oh, why is that happening? It was like, you didn't realize that it was a smaller place or whatever. And because they couldn't sell the tickets, but yeah, that was a different thing going to Berkeley to see them. It was kind of a smaller kind of theater, and they did not allow them, I remember, they did not allow the fire marshals did not allow them to do any of their fire or bombs, that sort of stuff. I think the only thing they were allowed to do there was the fog, the smoke fog kind of thing. It was you know, we were pretty up front on that one, and that was loud in that place too. It was loud in all those smaller places, but we went to that place, That was a cool, you know, it was a good show. It was interesting without makeup, right? So that was different. First thing you do, you buy your program. So this is the
Much nicer than the European tour book for that tour, that cover.
The Lick It Up tour book, you buy that and whatever else. I think that's the only thing I bought. Other than that, my T-shirt, I have that one picture that's on this collage or whatever. It's has me with the Lick It Up tour shirt on. Yeah, it was good. It was weird in a way because you're seeing them without makeup for the first time. And it's like, I mean, you see pictures of them, like, you know, the album cover and then the video, Lick It Up video and all. So you knew what they were. But, you know, to see them, it's like, it doesn't matter. They were still put on the great shows, still the Tank and that sort of thing. But they were, you know, they could run around a little faster in their high heel boots versus the 7-inch heels and that sort of stuff. So it was still an energetic, great performance.
Yeah, interesting thing. If you're able to read that very small text down at the bottom here, this show, Vinny spent the night after this show in a coffee shop trying to get a independent record deal with Shrapnel Records. Mm. So he was on his outs. Vinny was hasta la vista. So
where are you looking?
Yeah. What was your favorite song from this show? And then I'll ask the other guys that after we do
Well, just for the purposes, I think, because I liked it at the time. I always liked it, actually. And they actually played it, was All Hell's Breaking Loose. So I was actually able to see them perform that live. So I was lucky.
Well, we've got it from the recording, I believe. Here we go. All Hell's Breaking Loose. I went to Albuquerque for that one.
I don't blame you.
No, it needed it, so I wasn't going to torture our audience further with some of the audience recordings from the show. Mark, your favorite from that show?
Well, I was. It's funny because when I was listening to that right now, I'm like, wow, okay, there's not really much bass guitar here. But I go, this sounds really good. I'm thinking to myself, did I hear listen to the wrong show? And then I realized you're playing Albuquerque there, because I was thinking to myself, what I heard was just like, it was like absolutely unable to hear anything. But I think, though, that All Hell's Breaking Loose would have been probably my pick regardless, because I tend to find that when I was listening to this, the songs that were not very common in a set list always seem to immediately jump out more to me like that, you know. So I'm going to go with All Hell's Breaking Loose as well.
Daniel.
You're muted, Daniel.
Oh, you're muted. You pulled a Ken.
Ha ha.
I did a Ken, sorry.
There you go.
Well, I have to say, I also, just as Mark said, have a penchant. Is that the way you say it? Penchant for the lesser played songs, you know, uncommon songs and lesser known songs. And I'd say that Ken struck gold here, because they never played All Hell's Breaking Loose on any world tour after this. They attempted it at once or twice on one of those cruises, but they never played it after this. So that was great for you to hear that live. And I always love the line, I am cool, I am the breeze. He really you know, enforce the breeze in that version. So I have to go with All Hell's Breaking Loose, yes, because it's such an uncommon song for Kiss to play live.
Nice pick. I agree with you both. Oh, hey, you're still here, watching or listening. Why don't you hit that subscribe button or click the like one? And if you want even more, click on the join button on YouTube. Thanks for your support.
I like that video, Julian, but you should look straight into the camera so you see the eyes reading the text.
It was shocking.
The Swedish critic.
Like, no, I'm a teacher. I'm always trying to make it better, you know. I'm just helping you, Julian, here. It's
Julian, woke me up.
Creative criticism, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm not cutting that ever. All right, so here we are, Animalize Tour. You had to go to Oakland, and they were back in business to a certain extent, or maybe it was, again, the opener, like Motley Crue. Queensryche had come out with their EP in 83. Yeah. 84, they had The Warning coming out. Warning. Yeah, fucking great band. I ignored them in the 80s. I've only recently gone back and gotten into them, and I really love everything up through Empire. Just really, really good music. Ken, take it from here, seeing them on the Animalize tour.
Yeah, I did see. Well, yeah, Queensryche, just to say, Queensryche, I did have the EP and all that. So I was aware of them before, you know, going to see them. But, you know, we get to that show. Actually, that one's in Oakland, Auditorium Arena, what they called it. Henry J. Kaiser, they renamed it to that later. That was one where I thought we were going to get trampled outside because we were waiting in line and they had the steel, you know, whatever things, fences or whatever you want to call them.
Guardrails.
Guardrails, yeah, outside. And we're waiting in line and all of a sudden, whatever, this long line, we're near the front of the line because it's general admission. And all of a sudden, this big force of people are just, and we're like, oh my God, you know, we're going to get trampled here or something, you know, crushed outside. I thought it was going to be a, you know, the Who incident, like from Cleveland, Ohio or whatever, something like that, get trampled. Anyway, I was like, oh, jeez. But everyone settled down and no one got hurt. So, yeah, the first thing you go into that place, yeah, again, you get the program, but. There's no Bruce on this one. It's still the Mark St. John on here, but
wow.
First, nice.
Bruce was in concert at that one. But anyway, so that was that. The other thing I got from that one was the Animalize
bandana,
wrap it around.
Nice.
You know, yeah. So
Milberg High.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all right. It's kind of cool. You know. Yeah, Animalize. So that was my little thing I got from that. And then that show was, I remember it was good. The stage was, you know, okay. You know, it wasn't the tank or anything like that. It was a downgrade kind of thing going from the tank. But
did they use that lighting grid that went down?
I think they had, and that one. Yeah, I think they did. Yes. I want to say they did. If it fit in there, I think they did. I almost can't remember, but I'm pretty sure they did. Yeah, I think it did. But it was good. Otherwise, it was, you know, another great Kiss performance. And the thing is focusing on Bruce because, again, you got another new guitar, you know, lead guitarist. Like, okay, what happened to Vinny? Now we got Bruce. So, or what happened to Mark St. John? You know, it's like, well, he didn't last at all. But Bruce was good. He did, you know, a good job. He seemed a little stiff, of course, in the early years, and he was. But he, you know, obviously loosened up and got even better down the road.
And you got O Susanna and La Bamba. What was your reaction to that stupid jam that they used to do?
I don't know. It was kind of a joke.
And O Susanna. It's like, come on, guys. You could have fit in another song.
Yeah, it's kind of. I don't know what it was. I thought at the time, I was like, okay, what are they doing? You know, it's like, okay, this is kind of like just that they're doing, you know, joking around, goofing and letting off steam or doing something like that. I didn't understand why it was okay. It's kind of the crowd kind of like, okay, like it was kind of comical more than anything else, you know, like a funny moment than anything serious. So, but yeah, it would have been better if they were just inserted another song, Kiss song.
Well, let's insert another song here. That's a nice segue to the audio section. What was your favorite song? And we'll play a clip of it.
We're going to go with War Machine.
Yeah.
I'm glad your picks are matching up with the audio I prepared. That's surprisingly listenable as a mid-1980s audience recording. That was surprisingly enjoyable. Mark?
It's too bad he doesn't know his own lyrics, but remembering lyrics. Unbelievable.
On that one.
Yeah. Horrendous. But it's not too bad. I mean, I've definitely heard worse songs than that. But I really liked, I have my extensive list here. I'm actually going to say, and I'm sure Daniel will be pleased with this, but I thought Fits Like a Glove was pretty good on this show. I thought that one really stood out.
Yeah, it was good.
I think that Bruce did a good job. He did a great job on this show.
Daniel.
Yeah, I think the main thing is Gene sings the hell out of this show. He brings it vocally. But my favorite was the Gene bass solo. No, I'm just kidding. I just noticed that Julian wrote, he's written every song in the set list, and then he's written Gene bass farts. And that's what it sounds like. So that bass solo is so, No, favorite songs, I could go with any of the Gene songs. Fits Like a Glove was Cold Gin, I enjoyed. And, of course, War Machine. It's always fun to hear Eric sing a song. So maybe if I can pick only one, I would go for Young and Wasted, just because, it's cool hearing him, singing a song live. So Young and Wasted for me.
All right, so the following year, they're back again, and this time they're back at the Cow Palace for the first time since 79, I believe, for the Asylum Tour. And I wish I'd looked at this beforehand, because it crops off the date and all that shit on the little graphics. But Asylum Tour, I mean, were you enjoying this? Because Lick It Up, and then you got Animalize, and then you got Asylum. They're all basically similar types of albums. There's, no vast difference between them. It's not like you've got The Elder, Carnival of Souls, and then Dressed to Kill.
Big change live with a sign.
Yeah. Where was your headspace when you get to Asylum and Wasp opening this time? It's like Motley Crue over again.
Yeah. I thought, Wasp was another, I saw them one time before at the Crocus show. That we talked about earlier at the beginning. But I was excited for Wasp because I was into Wasp at that time. I was buying their first few albums and that sort of thing. So I was like, oh, great, get to see Wasp again. The actual seeing, year after year, almost right, you can see, Lick It Up, and then the following year, about a year difference again, you get the next Animalize, and then you get Asylum. Every time a new Kiss album came out, it was exciting, and then you expected the tour. So, and it seemed like it was exactly a year apart always at that time period. Until then, after Asylum, it changes. But Yeah, it was always cool. I enjoyed the Asylum album, the music. Yeah, it didn't change that much from Look It Up through Animalize Asylum. I mean, you know, pretty much same. It's just a production kind of thing. And of course, the guitarist changed, you know, on all the three albums is a different guitarist. Other than that, it was your standard, you know, thing. And you kind of hope that they would stabilize at least a guitarist. So, you know, the next album is not a new guitarist again, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, it was cool. They were consistent, I guess you could say, during that period of time.
How great that we have an off the soundboard from this tour as well. Yeah. And I think Wasp would have had Last Command out by that time,
yeah,
86. Yeah. So Last Command was what they were touring for. I don't think Electric Circus had come out yet. So great group. I mean, I love Wasp through, you know, still Me not too. Black enough, basically. And more of their recent albums. Obviously, Andy and I have done the Look It's Rock and Roll podcast episodes on Wasp, and we need to revisit the rest of the catalog on that. What was your favorite song from this? And then I'll go to the other guys for theirs.
Oh, what was my favorite? Oh, Fits Like a Glove.
Let me make Daniel happy.
Yeah.
One.
What's happening?
And you know, that you can actually hear the fans during that one part.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, let's
do butter.
Let's see how. Let's see how this one sounds. All right, Fits Like a Glove. I don't even remember which show this is from.
This is off the album called Lick It Up. The song is called Fits Like a Glove.
That'll be enough of that. Thank you very much.
What?
Not the best recording, but it was all right. Yeah.
Perfection.
No, it's, you know, it's really fun from that perspective. You know, I enjoyed that. Daniel, Fits Like a Glove, you were obviously happy.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I in particularly enjoyed that Ken picked Fits Like a Glove. That's the first time in 10 years he's picked that as a favorite. So, it's great. It's awesome, and it's a great version. And I think one of the high notes of recordings like this is that you actually hear the audience. At times, you can hear them coughing, speaking, and you hear them singing. You know, out of key. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You get the live feel. So at times, I enjoy those kind of recordings more than you know, off the soundboards. But my favorite has to go to, I think, All Night. I think it's a pretty cool version. And they scrapped that whole, you know, sing-along part of All Night that didn't work off the soundboard that we listened to a week or two back.
Thank God for that.
Thank God for that. It was terrible. So they scrapped that. And when they did that, I think the song works live. And it's nice to hear it, and I think it's a pretty cool song. And you know,
to our us who are loyal Kiss fans and have heard everything plenty of times, you tend to go for the uncommon song. So I have to pick All Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but All Night was a fun concert song when you're 14.
For sure.
And again, I became a fan to those videos. Mark, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's down to like either that or Tears Are Falling or something like that. But I mean, All Night is great. I mean, I definitely think that that was the one that kind of stood out because, again, you know, you heard all those songs, the other ones 100,000 times, and you wanted to hear something different. And as soon as that came on, you were like right into it, you know, just to hear what they did. And that by this point, too, I think it's important to point out that Bruce was very much now locked in and his soloing was fantastic at this point already.
All right, Ken, I think the magic of Kiss was in the 70s. Yeah, but Kiss continued in the 80s. And that's what we're celebrating today. Ken's Kiss is in the 1980s. The band didn't die, didn't roll over, didn't give up, didn't capitulate. They kept trying.
So, hey, Julian, I have a quick question, you know, about language. You see, that guy, he writes 70s without the apostrophe, and you use the apostrophe in 1980s Kisses. What's the rule here?
It's English when... rules. The rules vary. I'm not an English teacher.
Apostrophe is, I think...
You're from England.
What you're taught in school. Yeah.
So who's right? Is that guy Raymond Wright or is Julian Wright? Or
It depends on the sentence. 1980s Kisses.
Texting, it throws everything out.
Isn't it one is the possessive?
There's
no
punctuation in like texting, so you get allowed to do anything you want. Yeah,
so
That's always been a trouble for me. You know, we don't use
it's apostrophe. It's Saturday, Daniel. It's Saturday. School's out.
Okay.
No more teachers. No more books.
Okay.
English teacher.
All right. 1987, and this is a segue into Frehley's Comet. Frehley's Comet filmed Into the Night in San Francisco, their video for that down on Market Street.
Mm.
You got to see them with freaking Y&T again. Guns N' Roses had originally been billed as the opener, but was replaced by Faster Pussycat.
Oh.
Don't change that song because it's my favorite record. Babylon. Yeah. Okay. I love that first Faster Pussycat album. I'm sorry. Really fun shit. Tell us about Frehley's Comet and seeing that. You're back in Oakland at the Henry J. Kaiser.
Yeah. It was cool to finally see, you know, Ace release an album after being gone for a couple, 3 years, right? I was looking forward to that. You know, you had the Frehley's Comet album and that sort of thing. I was excited to see him. And you know, obviously without makeup again, because he's, you know, no longer in the band. We were excited to see it. You know, Y&T, of course, was a Bay Area kind of band, came out of the Bay Area. And they were always great.
Girls,
what's that?
What was that one song that Y&T is basically known for? Summertime Girls.
Girls later on, but yeah, their earlier stuff, you know, Mean Streak and all that kind of stuff was, you know, much better, heavier and stuff. But they were a great band, still a good band. Ace, I don't remember much of it, you know, other than it was just great finding, you know, to see him out there doing something again after being gone. You know, we was like, where's Ace? He's been working on an album forever or that sort of stuff. But he finally showed up. And of course I was going to see him at least the first time out.
Favorite song from the show?
I'm going to pick, you know, one of my favorite songs from his first album there, which was Rock Soldiers, which I always loved.
Yeah, he had a good selection of songs. I couldn't find any recording from this show, so I've gone to a soundboard for it. Yeah, it's not the, the greatest recording, actually.
But Ace is back, and he told you so.
I think it was.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what I, what I had to hand. Mark, thoughts on? Well, I didn't give you a recording to listen to for that. You know, which song would you have wanted to hear the most?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I probably would have liked to have heard, and I've heard him do this live at, during this time period, because there was like a good show available on YouTube where he played in England. I think it was during the Lita Ford tour or something like that, when they did something together, I think. But it was Rocket Ride. I mean, I have always, you know, he didn't, they never played at Kiss, right? So it was cool to hear him do it with his band then. So yeah, Rocket Ride has always been a favorite.
Yeah, for me, it's Rip It Out. I mean, I didn't get to see Ace in the 80s. I missed him. You know, the first shows that I got, I was, you know, I think it was Live Plus One, the EP. I was thrilled by that EP. You know, it was an exciting time for me. And seeing some of the reviews from the show, he was packing in quite a bit of the album, stuff that he had never done with Kiss. And also, come on. Deuce is there. I am a happy guy. Ace does Deuce. I am happy. I'd rather hear him do Deuce, the song he auditioned to in 72, in some ways, than Shock Me. So I thought all the songs that they did, Stranger in a Strange Land was a great song live as well. So that might be my pick, actually, if I have to pick one from his album. Daniel.
Yeah, it's a really short set list, but there are a lot of great tunes here. I'd have to say, but first of all, this was a great version of Rock Soldiers, and it always, I was always surprised that they didn't pick that as the first single. I think that's probably one of the best songs Ace ever wrote, you know, all the autobiography stuff in it, and it's a real cool sing-along song that you could easily have done a great video to and have as the first single of that comeback album. I think that was a huge mistake not to release that as the first song from that album. But if I could pick one from the set list there, I always enjoyed Breakout. Just imagine if they could afford a great wig for Anton Figg and put him in Kiss. Man, he rocks that tune. Man, he's a great drummer on that tune. Have you ever seen that? I'm sure you have, that version where I think it's from an instructional video that
Electric Lady Studios in 94, I think, or 93.
Oh, awesome. And he was a great drummer, and it really comes through on that song. So that's my pick. Even if I haven't heard it live from this show, it's always great live with Anton Figg on the drums. Mm.
Yeah, and Ken didn't get Anton Figg. Ken had Billy Ward.
Okay. Too bad.
Yeah. Oh, Billy Ward is a great drummer, too. So, all right, moving on into March 1988. Kiss comes back to town. They're touring their mega success. I'm sorry, they're touring Crazy Nights. And they've got a up-and-coming band who had found success with Among the Living. We're working. I don't know if State of Euphoria is finished at this point, but that's where Anthrax is in their career. Ken, take it away. Crazy Nights with Ken.
Yeah, I remember I was like, Anthrax, what? Why are they opening? Yes. That one just didn't make sense to me at all. What do you mean?
Metallica opened for Ozzy on Ultimate Six.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like the right type of band or music to open for Kiss. I don't know. That's how I felt at the time. I still feel the same way. And that's one of the reasons when me and my, I think I went with two of the guys, buddies, and we were in the stands there. We didn't go down the floor up front because we knew there was going to be a mosh pit and the people were going to, they were going to do that thing that was, you know, popular at the time, and, you know, creating a circle and, you know, running into each other and all that crazy stuff. I'm like, it's like, what the hell, man? I'm not there for that. So, we didn't stay down in front on that, so we saw it from the stands, kind of up and to the side a little bit, and that, sure enough, that was going on down there. I was like, holy crap, look at that, you know, this kind of crazy what they were doing down there. So that was like, I was glad when Anthrax was over, actually, and I never cared for them, actually. But of course, first thing you do is you buy the program, which got even larger from the prior ones. I mean, so freaking big. Freaking
obnoxious sized.
Yeah, it's just, it's huge. This thing is.
It's huge, but it also doesn't have the content to justify the size.
But yeah, it's just it's too much, too big. Anyway,
gratuitous to think they'd be doing books that big later.
Yeah, but the only thing is the show. Yeah, it sounded good, but there's it was something wrong at this show. There was just something wrong feeling, and then after we left. I thought, man, something is off. They were not the same band as they were a couple of years before.
Yeah.
They lost something. They lost their energy or their you know,
balls.
Yeah, the momentum. They just kind of going through the motions.
They weren't leaders
in
anymore.
This concert.
They were followers.
They were just, it's not a matter of followers, just they seemed like they're just going there to show up for the paycheck. Yeah, they still performed, but it just didn't seem like there was no hunger there at this time.
What did you think about sections in the Crazy Nights set? I mean, I love the Bruce guitar solo that leads into the Eric and Bruce little jam and then becomes Eric's drum solo. I love that section. And I like on Tokyo 88 when it goes into No, No, No. That's what made me like the song a lot more. You know, what were you thinking about those elements in the show? There's a lot of keyboardy stuff here as well. Or
yeah. The elements to change ups like that were good. The drums of Eric were cool. The drum solo and all that, with Bruce and Eric, like you said, it's like a drop off when songs like Bang Bang You just didn't work. Really didn't. It didn't work live. Fits Like a Glove still works, you know, all that stuff. Crazy Nights, yeah. But some of the other stuff was just, I don't know. And then did they really need to do a whole lot of Love from Led Zeppelin?
Well, the year before, you got Won't Get Fooled Again.
I mean, it actually won't
experience two good covers.
Yeah, Won't Get Fooled Again. I really enjoyed that one. I have to admit that one. But Whole Lot of Love, not so much. It was okay. I would have rather they put in another song instead of that. The other songs were pretty, you know, but Bang Bang You just didn't. I don't know. Love Gun opening the set was okay. It seemed to work somehow. But yeah, it was okay. Bang Bang You, though. Yeah, no.
Bang Bang You.
All right, what's your pick from the song before we go to the other guys?
I guess I'm picking the standard, the gold standard of Shout It Out Loud.
Yeah.
Right. This is actually a very listenable audience recording. Yes. Shout It Out Loud from wherever the hell this show was. Civic Center. Civic Center, sorry. It's easier to listen on your own stereo when you can dial back some of that high end. There's no way to adjust that for the show. That would have been way too much effort. Daniel.
Yeah, I think that's a great version of Shout Out Loud. I really enjoy the last part of the song when Eric Carr goes crazy on the double, you know, bass kick drum and rocks the hell out of that song. So that's a cool version. I understand that you picked that one, but I have to pick Crazy Crazy Nights. I recall hearing Crazy Crazy Night live for the first time. I think it was in maybe 2010 in Stockholm. And it was never really a favorite of mine, but live it went over so well with the crowd in Stockholm. So after hearing it live, and it was, of course, a huge success over there in the UK, where Julian's from, it went up to number four, I think. And it's such a, you know, crowd-pleasing song. It works so well. And if you've ever been at a concert and heard it live, I mean, that's the way it's supposed to. It was made to be played live. So I enjoyed the version on this from this concert as well.
I already gave mine, so Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Daniel. I think Crazy, Crazy Nights is a really great song on this version of it. You know, this is a time period that I remember when I first bought this tour. I have the Philadelphia show on VHS when I got it from the good old convention days when I went to those things. Mm-hmm. And bought that. And even then, you could tell that those shows in America were totally phoned in. They were like doing 80-minute sets. They were hardly playing over an hour. They were doing like the contractual minimum almost on their shows and then getting the hell out of there. But you could notice a huge difference, though, when Julian mentioned the Budokan show that they did in Japan during this time. That was, you could see like they had a little bit more pep in their step during that time. You know, they brought back, you know, I Was Made for Loving You, and it seemed like they were almost trying to find a path to go on to re-energize themselves. And it almost seemed like when they started bringing back some of the older songs, like they did for the next tour, which was for the Hot in the Shade, that's when things started to come back into form a little bit better, I thought. So this was sort of a, you know, we don't know what we're doing kind of period, I thought.
Yeah, I always wonder what happened in 1989, because when you see that Philadelphia show, it's Kiss at their absolute low point. And then if you watch Detroit a year later, 1990 or 2 years later, they're awesome. One of the best concerts I've ever seen from Kiss. So whatever happened there was good for Kiss between the albums.
You see it with Tokyo. You see it creeping in early 1988. They bring in stuff like Strutter, I Was Made for Loving You. And when they hit Japan, they've got things in there. And then we've got this next show, which is the last of Ken's Kisses in the 1980s, which is Paul Stanley's solo band. And just look there. Paul Stanley is the king of Kiss. You have I Stole Your Love, I Want You, Come On and Love Me.
Oh, what a song.
Strutter is obviously that had already come in. You've got songs that then are all in Hot in the Shade.
Yeah.
So that tells you where they came from. They came from the audience demanding more classics in the set, more songs in the set, Kiss actually listening, and Paul going out there and seeing the response that those songs got, and then realizing, you know, that, yeah, we'll try Little Caesar out. It ain't working. We're going to play I Stole Your Love, I Want You, and cram all those back in. Ken, talk about the Paul Stanley solo tour.
Yeah, Paul Stanley, that was like a surprise, right? I think saw it in a magazine that he was going to tour or something, do some solo shows. And luckily enough, he went to the Omni in Oakland, and very, you know, small kind of club. And I think it sold out pretty quick, but, you know, got tickets early. And the thing is, it was cool because he played a lot of songs that were, you know, not played. You know, he's played some of the classics like I Stole Your Love and I Want You, as you can see here. But there's like, you know, Tonight You Belong to Me is like, wow.
Yeah. You know, Wouldn't You Like to Know Me?
Which is my, you know, time. Yeah. Tonight You Belong to Me was like, you know, my favorite song off of the solo album in '78. But yeah, other ones from that. And then, you know, Come On and Love Me and stuff like that. It was just.
Hey, Ken, what do you remember if there was any sort of reaction to them, to him doing Let's Put the X in Sex? Was there kind of like a whoa, or what was going on with that? Or
Bathroom break.
Yeah, bathroom break. It was just like, it wasn't anything other than, you know, it's okay.
Kind of that was thing. Probably the most newest thing, probably in the Kiss thing that he was doing at that point, right?
Yeah.
Also, Hide Your Heart wasn't even released by this point.
Well, that's that's the thing. Hide Your Heart was the one that was the surprise, because it's like, here's a new song. I'm gonna do, you know, this is a new song. I was like, oh wow, we're gonna get a new song, and it was pretty darn good. You know, I think they did the sing. I think they did single on that kind of thing, that part. But it was, that was the excitement of that. Part of the excitement of the show is getting the songs. Oh, cool. This is going to be hopefully on the next Kiss album, which it was, you know. But it was always cool hearing a new material.
Yeah.
On a show like this.
And you get the three songs from a 78 solo album that I hadn't done live because they did Move On in 79.
So, yeah.
And you get another Zeppelin cover, Communication Breakdown. I mean,
it was a good show. Great band. Put that way that he put together, with, you know, Bob Kulick and, you know, Eric Singer, right?
And Dennis St. James on bass and Gary Corbett on keys.
Yeah, it was a solid band.
Hey, Ken, I forgot to ask you, when you went to the Crazy Nights tour, did you even understand that Gary Corbett was behind a curtain and playing the keyboards?
No, we didn't know.
Well, he wasn't there in March 88. He'd been
Maybe they had kicked him out because they couldn't afford him. So they didn't have...
No, they couldn't afford him. That's why he didn't make it through the end of the year, I believe.
I think he came back for the Japanese tour.
He came back for the European tour. I don't believe he went to Japan. I'd have to...
Okay.
Listen, Ken, what's your musical pick from the show?
Well, I picked, you know, it probably would have been Tonight Belonged to Me, but I did Hide Your Heart because it was the new song, because we hadn't heard it.
You liked before.
Yeah, the first time I heard it, I thought, oh, that's a pretty good song.
Yeah,
here it is. And it's not from this show because I couldn't find a recording from the Omni.
Yeah.
We're singing
right now. Yeah, they got us to sing that, I remember, at that show.
So that's Wilkes-Barre, which I picked just because it was easily to hand, and I used to live in Scranton for a while, which is nearby. So that's a great version of the song, and I think I would pick probably Tonight You Belong to Me. Mm-hmm. I always got off hearing the 78 solo album songs from this tour. There is one good soundboard from it. I couldn't find it quickly to use that, but you know, most of the audio has been processed and sounds like shit anyway. So there we are. Daniel, favorite
from this show. Yeah, I think it's cool that he played I Show You Love and I Want You, and both of those two opening songs made it to the Kiss set list in 1990. So those are killers. But one song that he played that I thought would probably work well on the Heart in the Shade tour, but wasn't played very often, is Come On and Love Me. And I think Lonnie will be happy to hear this, because I think it's his favorite song of all time. And I think they should have played that on the Heart in the Shade tour. It's such a, you know, happy-go-lucky kind of song, and it always works. I've only heard it live once in 97, and it was awesome back then. So I think it would have been even better here in 89 and then on the Heart in the Shade tour. So I have to pick Come On and Love Me.
Yeah, good pick, as always. Mark, what about you?
Wouldn't you like to know me? Wouldn't you like... That's the one I would have definitely picked.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of that solo album stuff. And yeah, that's another one of those diamonds in the collection there for sure. That's all.
Mark goes power pop. Wow.
Oh, well, yes. But Mark, when you say that, have you heard that duet between Ace Frehley and his ex-girlfriend that, you know, has been doing the rounds this week?
No, I haven't.
Julian, have you heard it? You know, Rachel and Ace doing, which one was it? What's On Your Mind? Have you heard that one?
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool version. You know,
it works. An AI thing, or is it an actual?
It's an actual recording. Someone has recorded it from using a radio or a phone or something. It's a demo. You should check that out. I think it worked out very well. I had to go and grab my guitar and learn that song because it sounded cool.
Yeah.
So Rachel
should not play her recordings down the phone to people to leak.
No.
She should actually release the album and do it properly so that the people who are involved get, you know, dealt properly rather than just giving it away. But there we are.
Yeah.
It was exciting.
Cool version.
That's it. Ken.
Oh.
One other thing.
You've got to pick your favorite KISS show from the 1980s from all of those. Ooh. Now that we have gone through and talked about each one of them, you can only have one. There are no ties, really? Ken.
From the KISS show? Yeah. It's going to be the first Creatures.
Yeah.
Saw that coming a mile away.
At Irvine. That was one. Even though the other ones were, same, just as good. It's the first time seeing the tank stage and the new outfit, yeah, and the new guitarist and all that. And that thing was just an awesome coming out of that show. Was just a great, you know, feelings like, wow, that was just like one of the greatest shows I've ever seen, you know, at that time. I mean, I'd seen a few shows, you know, other artists by that time, but that was just the most awesome thing. And then, on the other hand, flip side, you get the opposite feeling after the Crazy Nights thing, you know, getting out of there. It's like, man, KISS is, something's wrong. Someone lost something. But speaking of Crazy Nights, I was going to show this thing. KISS was monetizing.
What the hell is that?
This was bought at a penny crusher. Yes. Yeah. I bought this in they were selling these at the Crazy Nights show. And it's a, you know, it's a crushed penny.
$7.
KISS logo.
Yeah, I'm gonna say
it was
pennies for dollars.
Yeah, it's like, what a great idea. I was just thinking about it. I probably paid, well, probably no more than, I don't know what I paid. It was probably, I'm just gonna try to say, I'm gonna say $3 or something, but it could have been as much as $5. Who knows?
$5 for a penny.
But yeah, it's like, and it's, you know, you put it on your keychain kind of thing, which I did for the longest time.
I had
a keychain, but I thought, wow. One of the things.
Cool crap. Yeah.
Ken, thank you for providing your list of shows for us to do this. Thank you for bringing stuff to show and tell.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your stories, your memories, and your photos. It's been a fun walk down your memory lane with you today. And it's just been another way of doing a KISS show, is looking at some of the shows that we've attended as fans and trying to just give them a little bit of context looking back decades later. Daniel.
Yeah, I just think that story that Ken told would be a great article in one of the upcoming magazines in English. You know, Ken telling it all in the Destroyer magazine in English.
Transcribe this episode, and there you go. You've got it.
There you go, Daniel.
You can edit it up. All right. I want to thank everyone who's joined us live for their comments and dialogue during the show. You help make the show exciting and fun every week when we do these episodes. If you're catching this later, you're equally valued for listening to the show. So we do appreciate it. Hope you enjoy some of the music today. I do apologize for the abuse that it's been given on the high end, but there you'll get a dig out your favorite bootleg from these tours and give it a listen. That's the whole idea about celebrating KISS. We celebrated KISS in the 1980s today. Go celebrate it in your way. But for now, from Mark, from Ken, Daniel, myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the message board and discuss the topics we've broadcast today. Don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you've listened to this show, and a like would very much be appreciated. We hope you'll join us again, but until then, remember, life's a radio. Turn it up to 10.